Hi, everyone. My name is Stephanie Chukwuemeghi, and I am an alcoholic.
Justin.
Okay. Is that good? You can hear me?
Yes.
Thank you for inviting me to come tonight. It's an honor to be asked, right? But like, it's really nice to be invited places today instead of asked to leave or not come back. Which was definitely the norm for me when I was drinking. I was often invited because I started out fun. And then I became real sloppy, like sloppy drunk girl right here. And I was definitely very frequently asked to leave places or not to return to places. And so in AA, getting asked to come and to talk for like close to an hour, man, that's really cool. You know, for people like us, for a long time, people don't want to hear what we have to say. It's incredible that I get to do this today. And I also feel like it's a responsibility of mine. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life that I didn't even know I wanted. I didn't even know I was missing out on, you know? And for that, I am responsible, you know, to make sure that I'm here to carry the message. And to, when I'm asked to do something for AA, if it's reasonable, if I can do it, I need to do it, you know? That being said, I have learned that it's okay to say no sometimes when I have to, you know, but that doesn't happen too often. I guess I'll just start off by saying my sobriety date is September 13th, 2007. I have a sponsor. I have worked the steps a few times with a few sponsors. I sponsor women. I have a home group. I have a service position. And I do have a higher power of my misunderstanding. And I've had a spiritual awakening as the result of working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I say all of that at the beginning for a few reasons, right? One is to get the words started coming out of my mouth so that I can like be a little bit less nervous, because I'm still nervous. Every time I speak at the podium, I start out nervous every time. And I've done this a bunch of times. The difference is like, today I don't need a trash can next to me in case I throw up. that's good. So I say all that to get it out of the way. But also, once I start telling my story, I don't really know which direction it's going to go, which parts are going to be told. Certainly, there's more in my before AA and during recovery than I can fit into one meeting. So I don't know what's going to happen. But those key things that I just told you I have are super important, and I don't want to forget to mention them. Those are the main ingredients to my recovery. I need all of them. Or maybe I could do without one or two of those things, but I don't know which ones those are, so I'm not going to risk it. My drug of choice is more. Whatever you've got that makes me feel better or different, I want more of it. And today that is my sobriety and recovery and peace and serenity. And I'm not willing to risk it by letting go of one of those key parts of my recovery that I know works. Things change. I was just talking about this the other day with someone. My routine changes. When I came to AA, I went to at least like 8 meetings a day, not really, but a lot. I went to a sober club in Woodbridge, which is where I got sober. I went to lots of meetings all the time. I slept on their dirty sofa in between meetings because it was where I felt safest and I was away from alcohol, physically removed from alcohol. And that's what I needed. And then I started to like get things back. I became employable. My family wanted me around. I went back to school. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous as a high school dropout. I went to college. Good things started to happen in my life that didn't allow me to go to 5 or 6 meetings a day, you know, and that's okay. So the routine, the schedule has changed a whole lot over the years, but I need to make sure that I have a sponsor. I need to make sure I'm sponsoring people, or at least available to sponsor people, that I'm connecting with my higher power or trying to connect with my higher power, whatever it looks like that day, that I've got a home group, I've got a service position, all of those things, even though they look different over time, I have to keep all of them in my life. So there we go. There's my recovery. Now I can just give a drunk log, right? I'm not, but I'll tell you a little bit about what it was like just for fun. I mean, I think everybody here knows how to drink unsuccessfully. I don't need to teach you how to do that. But I used to say that I was a good kid and that things started out okay. And just a few days ago, I was thinking about, I had like a memory bubble of this awful situation that happened because of me in like seventh or eighth grade. I was young and I caused some stuff and the police got involved. And I think there might've been like a restraining order on me. And I was like 12 and I'm thinking about it. And I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't line up with my story where I say I was a good kid. This apparently was not true, but I just like kind of pushed that to the side because it was a blip. You know what I mean? But I got good grades. I didn't really get in trouble much when I guess when I was little, I always asked permission to do things. I wasn't like a troublemaker. And I guess I started getting in trouble earlier than I thought I did. I remember I'd planned my future. Gosh, when I was like 8 years old, I knew what university I was going to go to and how many kids I was going to have and what their names were going to be and what kind of house we were going to live. And you know, all these things I had planned. I knew it, all these things, eight, 9 years old. And so it's no wonder that by the time I was 12, I needed a drink. You know, that's a lot for an 8, 9, 10 year old to worry about and think about and try to manipulate and make things happen. It's insane. And that was no one's doing. Like nobody did that to me. You know, I didn't have a bad home, a bad upbringing. There wasn't drinking in my house. My dad got sober when I was 5. So there's alcoholism in my family for sure. And my symptoms showed up early. I believe I was born restless, irritable, and discontent. I was born like that. And when I found alcohol at 12, it helped. And I felt better. I wasn't able to drink regularly when I was 12. I went to a friend's house. Her mom went out of town or went out for the night and left us there. And we decided to go into a liquor cabinet and pour some stuff in a glass and try it. And I threw mine back, chugged it. She took a sip and was going to go dump it down the sink. And I stopped her. What are you doing? And she said, this tastes awful. And I said, yes, but you cannot throw it away. And I drank it. And so before I'd ever even heard the term alcohol abuse, I knew what alcohol abuse was. And I knew it wasn't okay. That was the first time I ever drank. First time I can remember really drinking intentionally. Who knows before when my dad was drinking at home, what that looked like. I don't remember. And so the next day, my dad found out I had been drinking the night before. I didn't even really get very drunk that I can remember. But he found out, I think I told him, and he took me to an AA meeting. Now at this point he'd been sober for several years and he took me to a young people's meeting in Woodbridge. And he said, I'm not saying you're an alcoholic. I just want you to know where to find help if you ever need it. There are a lot of alcoholics on that side of the family. My dad, his sister, her kids, his dad, my dad's dad, my dad's mom. I mean, lots of alcoholics. My sister is not. Sometimes I wish she was because a 12-step program could like really help her in a lot of ways. She's getting some more help with that, which is good. But you know, it's not everybody, but a lot of them in our family. So he took me to this meeting and he said, I just want you to know where it is. That's all. And not too long after that, I started high school. My birthday is in October. And so I was 13 when I started high school because then I turned 14, you know, like a month after it started. So I was 13 years old when I started high school. And I very quickly made friends with older kids who liked to drink and do other things. And I don't know, I guess I felt part of, accepted. I felt like those were my people. I mean, even today, alcoholics are my people. You know, but sober alcoholics are the ones that I hang out with. But like, I've always liked drunks, you know? And so I quickly got involved with some older kids and I'd gone into high school as with, you know, good grades. I was part of the gifted education program. I was on a track to do well. And after meeting these kids, it didn't take very long for me to go from drinking after school, drinking during school, skipping school to drink, dropping out of high school when I was 16 years old, junior year. So I made it like 2 years in high school, you know, 2.5 years in high school and wasn't there for a lot of it. And nobody really fought me on that decision. I think everybody kind of agreed I'd probably be better off if I got my GED and went to community college, which I did. I did those things. But then community college didn't really work with the lifestyle I wanted either. You know, I could pick when my classes were, which I thought would make all the difference, but it didn't. I passed one class. I passed philosophy because there's like no wrong answers in philosophy, you know. And all the other classes I failed. I didn't go. I dropped them, whatever, because there were other things I wanted to do. And I was 16, working full time, drinking as much as I possibly could. And I was able to get alcohol very regularly at that point because I was hanging out with 21 and 22 year olds. My parents, you know, didn't have alcohol in the house, so that wasn't the deal. But I had access. And I wonder like what my parents were thinking, because I was just out. Like, where were they? Why? I guess they trusted me. You know, I wasn't getting arrested. I wasn't coming home beat up. I wasn't wrecking cars. I wasn't like getting in trouble. So maybe they just didn't really realize what I was doing. You know, I was out with my friends having sleepovers. We were. Waking up in yards and, you know, whatever, in the woods, that kind of thing. Y'all know how it goes. So I'll fast forward and say that already at 16, 17, I was drinking daily. I ended up working in a bar, and when I was like 21 or 22, I was dating this guy, this Bulgarian guy, who's very, very cute. And we were on and off and on and off for a while. And he came to me one day when we were on, and he said, my work visa is about to run out. So you want to get married? And I was like, I mean, I'd like to keep seeing you. So yeah. Yeah, let's do that. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, still, it kind of makes sense. Like, why not? You know? Sure. So like, we liked each other, but it was kind of like a business arrangement too. We still had our own apartments, but we'd been seeing each other. So there was something going there. And I was hoping for more. I was hoping that this could actually work out. I did like this guy. And he drank as much as I did, but he drank different than I did. He drank at home. I liked to drink out. And here's the thing with my alcoholism, you know, and I think alcoholism in general, once I start, I can't stop. Once I start, I don't know what's going to happen. I have no control over the results of my drinking. And a lot of times I don't remember it. And so I used to come home, you know, we were staying at his apartment, even though I had my own, drunk. And he'd say, where you been? How'd you get home? I drove. Why are you driving? You know, and here starts the fight. And I take the ring and I throw it on the table and I storm out. And it was like so passionate and romantic, you know, and he would chase after me. And then one day he didn't. And he told me not to come back. And we never even got into the interview process of this whole citizenship thing. Like, he decided staying married to me was not worth staying in the country. So that's the only amends I've never made, because I don't know what continent the guy's on. Like, don't know where he is. Haven't found him on Facebook, but I'm willing. Should I ever? And I've said this, and it's so funny, but it is also so true. When I see him, find him, the conversation will absolutely start out as, I don't know if you remember me, but, right? Like, we were married for like a minute. And so that happened. We split up and I was really devastated. I was very, very upset. I was living in Stafford with him, and I was managing a bar in Alexandria. And so I decided to move to Alexandria now. I was going to live within walking distance of my bar. I was managing it. The owner was also an alcoholic, and he encouraged me to drink on the job and do other things supplemental so that I could function, you know, while I was drinking and, you know, run this bar. It was encouraged and it was allowed. And I moved within walking distance because I thought that was perfect. I never walked ever. I mean, it was less than a mile. I always drove somewhere. And my drinking escalated somehow. I mean, I was already drinking a lot, but I was drinking more. I was blacking out every night, losing time. There's still lots of time in there I don't remember. Also in the beginning of my recovery that I don't remember, because I came in pretty fried and it took a while to get back on earth. And I don't remember a lot of that time. I was coming out of blackouts while I was driving, putting my life together with receipts, you know, where was I? Oh, DC, this bar or out here. I didn't know who I'd been with. Wake up in strange places with strange people. And I put myself in very dangerous situations over and over and over again. And I had no control. And I didn't want to stop drinking. I loved drinking, but I wanted to stop the bad things from happening. I wanted to drink successfully. I truly had a dream of being like a little old lady with like a cat drinking vodka on my porch and just like enjoying life. Mm. That's what I want. That's how I wanted to go down. That's how I wanted it to go. I knew I was an alcoholic and I was okay with that. And if I could have had that, if that was like the way my drinking was going, I would probably still be drinking. Cause to me, that sounds like successful drinking, you know? But that's not how I drink. I got hurt. I got in trouble. I would wake up beat up and not know why or how or where. Every day I walked around looking at my feet because I couldn't look anyone in the eye. People would want to tell me what happened the night before. And I'd just say, please don't, you know, there's a reason that that was removed from my memory. I don't need to hear about it. I was embarrassed and I was ashamed all the time. And I had, God, when I finally did come here, I had the gift of desperation for sure. I used to think that aside from like how I felt inside, my life looked pretty normal. And then like after I was here for a while, I realized that's not true because like I was 23 going through a divorce from a guy like that I didn't really know that well. And I had a DUI. And I told myself that after the DUI, I wasn't going to drink and drive. Well, that's not realistic because I drink every day. So am I just going to not drive ever? Okay, I won't drive after two drinks, but who only has two drinks? I'm not going to drive after four drinks. But then by four drinks, I forgot about the rule. And now I'm drunk and I'm driving. And whoever gets in my car, this is what I thought was like really good planning. When my passenger got in the car, because I was usually with people, instead of like getting someone else to drive, I would give them my attorney's phone number and say, if I'm asked to exit the vehicle, I will be arrested and I need you to call my lawyer. That was the instructions given by my lawyer, who, when I was arrested, I met in a bar to talk about my case. We had a drink together. He was hired by the owner of the bar, right? So circles. And he said to me, next time this happens, I want you to refuse the test, yada, yada. This is what's going to happen. But he said, next time this happens, he didn't say, hey kid, why don't you not drink and drive anymore? Cause he knew that wasn't like, he knew I was going to do it again. And so let's have a plan. And I did. And I planned it, you know, with people that's how I drank. And so one day on September 13th, 2007, I was 23 years old. And like I said earlier, my birthday in the fall. So I turned 24 right after that. But I was still 23. I was young, didn't feel young. And I came to in my apartment and I was in a situation I shouldn't have been in, wouldn't have put myself in had I been a little less drunk. I had a black eye, I had a busted lip, my car was gone, my cell phone was gone, and I had no idea what had happened. I still don't. And so I made my way into work. And I went into my office and I, of course, look like hell, smell like hell, feel like hell. And a guy that worked there came in and said, man, after you left here last night, it got real crazy. And I said, after I left, I was off last night. And he just looked at me like, oh God, you don't remember. And he said, you came in, you know, with some people and this happened. And he told me some fifth step type stuff. And I said, I don't remember that at all. And he said, well, we've got the security footage if you want to see it. And I said, no, thank you. I do not want to see that. And so, you know, I didn't, I never did watch it, but I asked him to leave my office and I just thought, what happened? This was not the plan. What happened? I always get choked up when I tell that part because it's like I can feel it again. That sadness and that desperation that I had, and I was just lost. And I didn't know what to do. And so I believe now, I believe that my higher power intervened. I didn't have a higher power at the time. I was an atheist. I thought I was an agnostic, but I wasn't as open-minded as I thought I was. And I picked up the phone and I called my dad. And that was not my idea. It was not, I did not want to stop drinking. I had never tried to stop drinking before that. I had tried to control my drinking. I had tried to not get in trouble when I drank, but I'd never tried to stop. I never wanted to stop. And I picked up the phone and I called my dad and I said, "Are you going to a meeting tonight?" He said, "Why?" or "Yeah," or whatever. And anyway, I met him and he took me to a meeting. And he didn't ask me what happened. He didn't ask me why I wanted to go to a meeting. You know, I met him at his house. He drove me. Here's his very young daughter, again, beat up, physically beat up. He didn't ask any questions. I feel bad for the guy because I'm his favorite. And it must have been really hard for him, you know. But he took me to a meeting, and I think he may have taken me to one the next night. Like, he took me, I think, to a couple few meetings. But he hooked me up with the women in the meetings and got me phone numbers and did like a bless and release situation. Like, here you go. Here's the help. Good luck. You know, he didn't try to sponsor me. He didn't try to find me a sponsor or tell me what meetings to go to. He just dropped me in right in the middle and he stepped away. And I'm grateful for that. You know, he let me find my way. And I remember, you know, how, I don't know if you guys do it here, but you pass the where and when around for the new people with your phone numbers on the back. And so I don't remember my first, I don't know how many meetings, because like I said, when I came in, I was still like in a brownout or whatever they call it, gray out, brownout, whatever. My mind was messed up. My whole first year of recovery is kind of fuzzy, really. And at one of the first meetings, this woman came up and gave me a where and when with all these phone numbers. And she pointed at her name and said, "You can call me anytime, you know?" And I said, "Well, thanks, but I'm not here to make friends. So I'm probably not going to call you." And I was mean. and I am friends with her now. Like, you know, I did eventually end up speaking with her, but I didn't come here looking for friends. I did not come here looking for a higher power. I was not willing to go to any lengths like you guys talked about. Didn't want to work any steps because it makes sense to join a 12-step program, like the original 12-step program, and not want to work 12 steps. Why do we think that? Like, so many people, me and a lot of other people, like, join this 12-step program and don't want to work the steps. Yeah, that was me. I didn't want a sponsor. I didn't want to do any of it. I wanted to hang out in these meetings away from alcohol and hopefully just not drink and hold on as tight as I could and survive. I wanted to not die. I did not think about all the other things I was going to get with sobriety. You know, I just knew I didn't want to die. And if I kept drinking the way I was, I would. So I did not come in here one of these new people saying, "I'll do whatever you tell me to." I came in very stubborn, and I knew I was an alcoholic. I wasn't questioning that. I think that mainly I didn't want to talk about God. I know that's why I didn't want to sponsor, and that's why I didn't want to work the steps. I know, I definitely know that. But all the rest of it, not talking to people, not getting phone numbers or having friends. I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know why I didn't want to, but I know I wasn't willing to go to any lengths, and I'm glad nobody asked me if I was, as if that was a requirement. Because the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, and that I had. That was all I had. If I had been told, "You have to get a sponsor or you can't be here," I would have left. If I had been told, "You must be willing to go to any lengths," by the way, my lengths, not yours, I would have left. And nobody told me that. Now, I did have to do all those things eventually, right? Like, but I had to find that out on my own. I couldn't be given an ultimatum. And so there was this one woman who I'd met through my dad before I got sober. They used to come and do like open mic and karaoke and stuff at my bar. We did all kinds of stuff. And they would come, him and his friends, and they would drink, you know, sodas and eat wings or whatever. And so there was this woman that I'd met through my dad. And she was the only person that I allowed to be my friend. allowed. You know, I was very important and very special. Really had a lot of potential, right? Everybody wanted me around. No, but I apparently thought I was really cool and too good for you drunks. But this one I would talk to, and she would come pick me up and she would take me to meetings. Cause at this point I'd been convicted of this DUI. And I had a restricted license and, you know, all the stuff that comes with that. And so she would get in the car. She would call me and check on me. She got me involved in a group that was my home group. I don't think I realized it at the time. She got me involved in service work. I didn't know it was service work, you know, had me getting ready for the group's anniversary and doing like potluck style and helping to make cookies with all the people the night before. And, she was tricking me into getting sober, and I just didn't want to drink, and I didn't want to be alone. You know, I felt like if I was alone, I was going to drink. And so I needed to be around people who weren't drinking. And so I went, and a few months went by, I think like 3 or 4 months of just don't drink and go to meetings. And I was not drinking, but I was not getting better. I was still making pretty bad choices. I still wasn't feeling very good. Some things were getting better because I was not drinking. You know, I wasn't drunk at work anymore. I wasn't waking up in strange places and not remembering the night before. I wasn't losing my car anymore or getting arrested or starting fights. I love to start fights. Never won a fight. Love to start fights. I wasn't doing that stuff because I was dry, but like emotionally, I just really wasn't feeling good. And so after a few months, I was in the car with this woman, and I told her, I mean, basically, I don't remember the words, but basically I was saying, I feel like I'm getting closer to a drink than further than from a drink. And I'm afraid, you know, I felt like I was getting like things were calming and I was about to mix it up, you know, cause like when we get bored, when I get bored, I like to shake it up and see what's going to happen. And I was getting there. And I was worried that I was going to drink. And she said, well, you know, we could work the steps. And she wasn't my sponsor. I didn't know she was my sponsor. I didn't know she was my sponsor. And I said, I don't, but what other ideas do you have? You know, I don't want to do that. And she said, you know, if you will work the steps with me, you'll be helping me. I think she's got, and she's not my sponsor today, but we're still friends. I think she's like 18 months further along than I am in recovery, maybe 2 years. So she hadn't been sober a really long time. And I think I might've been the first person that she sponsored. I didn't care about any of that. You know, to me, she had been sober forever. 18 months is like, it's a long time. It is a long time. She had a lot more time than I did. And she said, you would be helping me. And I thought, well, I mean, she needs my help, you know. So I guess, okay, I'll let you take me through the steps, you know. And I don't know how I went from no to all in, because once I started, it was on. And she and I met at least once a week, but I feel like it had to have been more. And we would go to the Denny's and smoke cigarettes and drink coffee all night long. And we went through the big book together, and she read it with me, which I needed. Had she said, go home and read this and come back and talk to me, I probably wouldn't be here today. Cause I needed help also. I mean, just for my, to be able to understand what was in the book, I needed somebody with me to explain it. And I mean, read some of it, because again, I was like pretty messed up when I came here. So we would sit down and we read the book together. And when it said write, I wrote. When it said pray, I prayed. Didn't pull in any like worksheets or workbooks. I'm not that I'm opposed to those, and I've used them since then, other times that I've gone through the steps. But the first time I had to keep it real, real simple. That was all I could handle. And we worked the steps quickly. And I'm grateful for that, because I don't know how long I could have dragged it out, how much longer I could have dragged it out without drinking. I have seen people and met people who can go a year or years without working the steps and they don't drink. And then I have seen people who go a month or less and they haven't started the steps and they drink and they drink and they drink over and over and over again until they come in and they get to work and they work the steps. So some of us can go a while and some of us can't, and I'm not qualified to decide who's who. And neither was she. And so she said, let's get to work. And we did. And I did all of it as thoroughly as I could at that time, which probably wasn't very thorough. I couldn't remember a lot of stuff. And that's okay, because I got to go back and do it again later. You know what I mean? That woman who I believe I was the first person she sponsored me, and she saved my life because she helped me find a power greater than myself. I did not want that. I was that obnoxious drunk who would get into religious debates with believers, you know, and tell them why they were wrong and call them names and put people down and judge them. Yet I thought I was a very open-minded individual. And then I read We Agnostics and I realized I was not as open-minded as I thought, because when it came to God, the door shut right there. So when I got to that second step with her, which was, I mean, immediately, because the first step got me here. Like I had done that went before I came through the doors. I didn't want to talk about it, you know, and I'm really grateful that she didn't make me sit on step two and or three for very long and wait for like the God switch to go on. Because I wouldn't have stayed sober. She said to me, are you willing to believe that there's something out there greater than you? Something. Because obviously, like, my way sucks. So you better hope there's another way. You know, like, there better be something bigger than me, because if it's all me, this is not going well. And I said, yeah, maybe. I guess it's possible. And she said, good enough. Let's move on. And we did. And I got into a fourth step. And a fifth step, and the rest of them, because by the way, there's more after that fourth and fifth step. So like, it's not like you're going to drink if you don't do a fourth step. Yes, that's probably true. But also you need to do all the ones after that to stay sober, or at least I do. I think most alcoholics do. And it was through working the rest of the steps that I came to believe in a power greater than myself for real. And I started to connect to a power greater than myself. And I did have a burning bush moment that, it to tell the story, it doesn't sound like one, but the feeling was there. It was like, aha, there you are, you know? Oh. And for a little while, that higher power, because I wasn't raised religious at all. So I didn't have any kind of background or any kind of belief to go off of. I mean, I got to start with a blank slate, which is kind of nice, you know, and really build a higher power, or with a higher power that I could understand and I could do work with, or do business with, as they say. And so at first I just kind of hung on to all the stuff that I heard in meetings about what your higher power looked like. And that was mine. And that worked for a while. And I held on to that. And gosh, I mean, I feel like since then, my understanding of my higher power has become more and more vague. Like, really, the longer I'm here, the less I understand and the less I know. And that's okay. Like, how cool is it to be in a spiritual fellowship where our spirituality can change? And it's okay with everyone. I'm still allowed to be here. There's no right or wrong kind, as long as I'm maintaining or attempting to maintain or seeking. There's a part in the book I was looking through earlier. I've got all these like tabs and, you know, highlights and stuff. And I'm like, let me just skim through and see what kind of stuff I highlighted before. And there's in the margins, I wrote something about seeking, and like, that's the deal. I have to seek whatever at the end of the day. Maybe today my higher power is God and tomorrow my higher power is the universe or whatever. That's fine. as long as I am seeking and turning it over and I'm not trying to run the show, it is all good for me. That works fine for me. And my higher power has absolutely changed back and forth here and here over the, you know, 15 years I've been here. It's changed a lot. And I've even had times that I've questioned a higher power. I've had times where I've gone back to that, like, but really, you know, and here's what always reminds me, that there is absolutely a power greater than myself out there. It's not even my recovery. It's yours. Because there are people that I saw come in when they first got here who were hopeless, absolutely hopeless. Like, I was like, they're not going to make it. Like, I'm just, you know, I know that's, we're not supposed to think that, but I've thought it. Like, I don't think that one's going to make it. And then I see them get sober and stay sober and turn their lives around. And that's like, wow, something had to do that. They didn't do it. I didn't do it. Something had to do that. There are miracles all over Alcoholics Anonymous that remind me that there is a power greater than myself. And I don't have to know what that power, I don't have to be able to explain it. It's so big, I can't explain it. Who am I to try? Way too big for that. And I'm trying to talk a lot about the higher power deal because I was asked to talk about the last two paragraphs on 29 that, you know, it talks about how we, how, what does it say? You guys just read it. You just read it. I don't have anything in the big book memorized. That might not be true. Hold on. I'm going to get there. Give me a second. Each individual in the personal stories describes in her own language and from her own point of view, the way she established her relationship with God. So I'm trying to like bring it back to that, right? That's the format here. And I'm really digging this. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women desperately in need will see these pages. And we believe it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. I felt that way when I came here, but I didn't want to do any of the work, as I told you. And so my hope when I share, I kind of always share, whether it's a speaker meeting or I'm just sharing in like a discussion meeting, as if somebody's in their first meeting, whether that's true or not, that's the kind of message that I feel like I am responsible for carrying. And my hope is that when I share, people will think like, oh, I should probably do the work. I should probably do it because when I came to AA, I thought I knew I had to not drink again. And one day at a time didn't make sense to me. I thought that was hogwash because one day it just didn't click for me. You know, I understand it better now, but at the time I didn't understand. I knew I could not drink again if I wanted to live. And I thought that the rest of my life was going to just be just don't drink, just don't drink, just don't drink. Don't drink, don't drink, don't drink. And that would have been awful. That's worse than drinking. Obsessing about not drinking is really painful. And that's how I was before I started working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and getting into it and developing a relationship with my higher power. That's how it was. Don't drink, don't drink, don't drink. I'm so glad it's not just, you know, or one day at a time in the sense of don't drink today. And just thinking about that all the time, because that sucks, man. Like, I don't wish that on anyone. And if you are feeling that way, please talk to me or talk to your sponsor or get a sponsor, like before you leave, just pick one, you know, you can change later if you have to, it's fine. I have, we've got to do the work for the peace. And so today, you know, I'm 15 years I've been here, which is crazy. I'll celebrate 16 years and then I'll turn 40, which is really crazy. Shit. That's like, although my goal, you know, or my dream was to be that 90-year-old woman with a cat drinking vodka on the porch. I did not believe that I would live to see 30. And I probably wouldn't have if I'd kept drinking the way I was, driving in blackouts and hanging out with dangerous people and being dangerous people. It's just, you know, dangerous. Like I don't know how that I would have lived very long. So turning 40 and being sober, and having a husband who wants me around usually. He's also sober. We met at an AA dance in, 2012, an AA dance. Isn't that so gross? And I'm like almost embarrassed you to say it. When I came into the program, at first I was like, men, stay away from me. I was very disgusted with myself and ashamed of the way I had been before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I did not want to be around men. And that went away eventually. Didn't take too long. Before I had a year sober, I met a man in AA who he was 10 years sober. And I was about, 8 minutes sober. Not really, but it was less than a year. And we got into a relationship and held each other hostage for over 3 years. Yeah. And it was toxic. It was bad. I think we started seeing each other. I don't know if I'd even started the steps yet. If I'd started, I certainly hadn't finished them. I definitely wasn't ready for a relationship. And I'm not one of these, like, don't get in a relationship or make any major changes in the first year. I'm not into that. Because where does it say that? The first year, like, how is that the magic number? I think it's before you've worked the steps. Because I would rather see somebody with 10 months clean who has worked the steps make some changes than somebody who is 5 years dry who's never worked the steps. Like, I'd rather hang out with this one, you know? And I'm going to trust this one's decisions a little bit more too. So, but I wasn't there. I wasn't ready. And we did the dance for 3.5 years. And neither of us drank. He was in the program too, 10 years sober when we met. And I think he did step away. I'm not sure. But I, even though like that relationship was toxic and I should not have been in it, I was in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous and I had people holding on to me so that when it got rocky, like there's two ways that can go, right? Either I start to step away and feel sorry for myself, or I jump in even further. And I swear, it's like every time something happened, I was voluntold to do something else, whether it was help with the Alcathon or start doing like the district newsletter or whatever. Always people were giving me things to do and holding and pulling me in tighter and tighter and closer and closer. And they didn't even know that I needed that. Like it just happened. It just happened. And so when that relationship ended, I spent some time working on myself and I got to this place where I was like really comfortable with me and I was comfortable being alone, like even like in a room by myself. I don't think I had been comfortable in a room by myself my whole life. And to feel at peace with no one else around and nobody else to validate me was amazing. And I got that through Alcoholics Anonymous and working the steps and finding a higher power that I could have faith in and turn my will and my life over to, you know what I mean? And I just started to feel okay. And so then I go to this Valentine's dance at the Rebos Club and I'm like, I don't need no man. And in comes this guy, you know, and I didn't want anything to do with him. And then it seemed like he didn't really want anything to do with me, and that piqued my interest. And so now we are married. and we ended up moving to Fredericksburg in 2014 and got engaged that year and married a couple of years later. And I'm about to turn 40 and I'm like married with a couple of dogs in a house in Spotsylvania, Virginia. These are not things that I knew that I wanted when I came here. I wanted to not die. I wanted to not drink, kind of, I just wanted to live more than I wanted to drink, I guess is what that, no, that's not true. Whatever. I wanted to not die. I did not want any of this other stuff. I didn't think, peace was an option. I didn't think I would ever have any meaningful relationships with anyone, or that people would ever want me around, or that I would be asked to come and speak in a meeting and share my story. I didn't think that I would be able to stay sober for a few months, you know, like that just seems so out of reach. So many other things have come with being sober than not drinking. It's incredible, right? Like, I'm trying to find the words and I just can't even. And I might even have to end early because that might be it. I'm really grateful to be here and I'm glad that you asked me to come out. And I hope that if there is somebody here who is new or newish or not even new, and you just, you know, you're kind of floundering, you don't have a sponsor, you're not working the steps. Like, I hope you'll do it. Cause it does. Like, I'm grateful to be sober. I didn't expect that. Like I said, I thought it was just going to be like so hard. And my whole life is just going to be obsessing about like how to not drink today. And it's not, you know, when I think about drinking in an AA meeting, that's when I start thinking about drinking. I don't think about it besides that. Like, I don't think about alcohol. I can go anywhere safely. I don't have to worry about, is there going to be alcohol there? Do I need an escape plan? I mean, I did for a while, you know what I mean? But today that's not an issue for me. I am protected. You know, I did not think that was ever going to be the case. I didn't think I was going to have friends. I didn't think I would be doing service for Alcoholics Anonymous. I love service. Billy knows this. I found my niche in general service. It's just like where I feel comfortable right now. I don't know. I just wasn't expecting any of it. And I'm really grateful for it. And I'm sorry that I'm ending a few minutes early, but you know, there you go. Thanks for letting me share, guys. Yeah.